what's the gang? Go ahead, Chad.
Just gone, you know, let you know, Larry, you know, me and my cousin up there in Pickens, we bought out the old Ryobi, the old Singer plant, right there on Main Street in Pickens. We bought out the maintenance section there that kept all of the repair parts to keep the plant up and running when it was throughout its history. There's stuff in there from the 30s, just like a time capsule. Well, we bought all of it, pipe fittings and everything. And there, I don't know how many actuators, linear actuators we've got. I mean, we'll never use the things. You know, I've got plenty of those. So if you need an actuator, linear actuator to, you know, and they're 12 volt. I've got some AC, I think, but most of them are 12 volt. So, you know, keep that in mind. I got plenty of those. And if you know, you want to come up with some kind of design or something, just, you know, I'm retired. Just come on up here. We'll build it. I mean, there's enough metal down there to build an Eiffel Tower, I'd say. It just might not look like the Eiffel Tower, but we get close. But linear actuators, rotary actuators, I mean, you name it. You wouldn't believe the stuff that was in there. There were two pillar block bearings that had Westinghouse tags on them. I'd say that's from the 40s, with a 6-inch bore in it. I bet you one bearing was, I don't know, it had to be 120 pounds or more. And I'm just thinking, what in the world would carry a 6-inch shaft? I mean that's just getting up into marine stuff. But I mean, they had that big stuff up there, and so you know, just let me know what you need. I probably got it, and we'll probably never use it. So I'd like to see somebody use that stuff. So just throw that into your engineering mind, and you know, just let me know what you need. Because I probably got it. Go ahead and take it, Andy.
KI4LCI. I don't remember where I saw it at. It may have been out there at the mill, out there where I saw it. Somewhere where everybody parked up there back in the day when that plant first come into being, way, 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 way back before our times, obviously. Everybody parked in the center of town. That's how the Pickens was back then. The parking lot was where the road is now. Everybody parked there, then walked from up there down there to where that plant is, and this was during the time from the changeover from horse and buggy over to automobiles. Well, it was, my sister informed me that was during the grand opening down there that occurred. You remember seeing that?
I do not, Andy. If that probably would have been maybe before my time, or I was not young enough to notice, not old enough to notice things like that. But when next time you go by there, there's a smokestack. There's a building with a smokestack. It's one of Chinese things, real tall kind of thing, made out of brick. And it was originally the Sangamo plant, and they rebuild big transformers and big capacitors for the U.S. military during the war. Had the PCBs in it, the real toxic stuff. And Sangamo was the one that has, you know, basically poisoned the 12 Mile River from the 40s by dumping that stuff in the river. But anyway, the smokestack there is they produce their own electricity on site. And that's when they changed over from line shafting. There's a section of the building down there that still has the original line shafting in the ceiling, which is basically a big, you know, big shaft with pulleys on it, and it runs flat belts down to the machinery. But just going in there and looking at that building in there, there is a Westinghouse steam-driven generator in there that I'm pretty sure the tag said 1936 on it. It's in wonderful condition. I would estimate that it probably weighs anywhere from 10 to 15 tons. It's a 250 kilowatt generator, Westinghouse generator. There's two of them in there stacked on top of one another, but they're not the same size. One of them's a smaller generator. And that big building that they're sitting in, that's the boiler. The boiler is three stories high. And they powered it with coal. And there's still some coal left in the storage chimney there where they would, you know, shovel it up to the third floor and shovel it into the boiler. But when we purchased the equipment, the guy that bought the place, let me let this radio cycle here. Place, there was a section of the maintenance section there that had where they had the machine shop and all of the tooling, and it was the strangest thing, Andy and Larry. It was like they came to work one day and the next day it was over and just walked out. And it was like a time capsule, literally. And some of that stuff, you know, some of the equipment in there was from the 40s and 50s, which is, you know, wonderful machinery to operate. That's when, you know, the United States built their own equipment and took, you know, a lot of pride in some of the equipment. And I've got some of them down here in the shop. But that was just fascinating to walk in and see, you know, that thin layer that thick layer of dust that you know, that stuff had been sitting in there from the 50s or 60s. And like I said, it was just like they just walked out one day and didn't come back. And that's just a really interesting place to, you know, walk around and see down there. There's two buildings in the back that I'm sure somebody's been in them, but I don't know what's in them. I mean, the doors have been locked, and to my knowledge, since the guy bought the place to turn it into the mill, the flea market, I don't even think they've been in it. Don't even know what's in it, or at least me and Chris don't. But when it comes to equipment and things like that, when I have some kind of issue down there, we'll go down there and look at it and check it out and see what it is. But that's just a pretty interesting place. But anyway, Larry, my point all this is, you know, when you're designing your tube or whatever that's going to hold it and it needs to be hidden, or, you know, telescoping this, it needs to slide inside another element to move up or down or left or right or go round and round, whichever you want to do, just let me know. We probably got it. Just to give you the scale of this, when we purchased the maintenance cage, it had all the repair parts and stuff in it. We quit counting the pneumatic cylinders. We quit counting at 800. All different sizes. Hydraulic cylinders that are inch and a half long, to air cylinders that are 6 feet long. Just, you name it. From feminine products to 2-inch brooches, it was in there. It took us almost a year to get the stuff moved out. There's so much of it. 2 stories of it. Let me know what you need. I'm sure it's there. So, KL4NUE.
Conduit under the plant. I mean, just
tens of thousands of pounds of it. And they, you know, stripped all that out and took it to the scrapyard to, you know, help pay to get the place operational. But just, you know, step back in history to go and see. And the Board II building back there, like I said, it's got, I mean, the desk that the foreman sat at to keep the boiler operational. I mean, it's the chairs there, the desk there. I mean, it's just like they just walked out one day, just put locks on the place and just walked out the door. And I mean, that to me, that's history. I like seeing things like that, you know. But like I said, we purchased all of the repair parts and the maintenance cage itself. It was funny, we were cleaning the thing out. I'm talking about, and I just want to be clear here, tonnage of repair parts. Some of them which we'll never use. I bet you I've got two or three half-ton truck beds full of bearings, whatever size you want, it's in there. That kind of scale. But it was funny, as we was cleaning things out, we found sections in the shelving in there where the mechanics or the technicians had hidden parts that were hard to get or that the plant wouldn't purchase. And they would stuff them in holes in the brick and put newspaper or rag over them. So, you know, it's basically squirreling away repair parts so they could do their job, basically, what they were doing. But it's just, you know, comical to see that and, you know, think like a maintenance guy, you know. We found most of them, but it's just kind of funny what some of the stuff they hid away in there. KO4NUE. JBQ.
Chelsea, I go ahead, Larry, because I butted in enough, but I was trying to tell Chad there where I saw that picture at. My sister's the one that showed it to me.
I must admit that I'm, my clock is running down. It's 1:15, and we are past the point at which we need to be aware, need to stay aware of the repeater's timeout. Yeah, so the squirreling away of repair parts and things. I've worked in a number of shops, in a number of kitchens, and, you know, done a lot of things. But I do remember doing that, and I had not thought of doing that in 20 years, at least. But that's what you would do, because you were expected to get a job done. And if you knew that it would be advisable, you took it upon yourself to be self-advised, to save some things, to put aside some things that were hard and getting harder to get, you know. I was a jeweler at one time, and I would put sheets of gold away. And sheets of platinum, so that we might get the work done in a timely way, because everything's about pleasing the customer, you know, and their time is worth a lot more than your time, or the time that it would take to secure these things that we put away. I'm sure that wasn't anything that was lost. But if you close the plant the way they must have closed the plant, Everybody told, you don't need to show up again tomorrow. We're closed. If that's the way it was, and I did work for one business that was like that. One Friday morning, or maybe it was late morning anyway, before lunch, we were told that this was the last day. And I've never been more surprised by an employer. Never. The business would not operate. It was gone. It was defunct the next day. And I had not been there that long, maybe 3 years. But there were people that had worked there for 23 years and were highly invested in the health and well-being of this company. Highly invested. And they lost everything. And there was crying all day long. Weeping and wailing all day long. I'll never forget that experience. We took them to court and received nothing. Because they have been so careful to squirrel away and to hide, to obfuscate the ownership of all the company and its belongings, to protect it from creditors and, I guess, from employees. That's how dirty some people can be. With every intent, it's not that they fell into doing the wrong thing. They intended the wrong thing for a long time. But payback is, that's not for me. I really sit in a really comfortable place. People can do anything they want to do, and it's not me to judge. I do not stand as anybody's judge. And I feel good there. I can make peace with that. Oh, so anyway, I just want to, just before I take my leave, because I believe it's 20 after 1 now, it's time for us to consider bedtime. I just want to remind you, Chad, that you will be, well, let me just do this. I'll send you a link to the video that his first name is Sandy, that Sandy made of his shop, and to introduce his followers to his practices and procedures for making his knives. I was not aware of how extraordinarily made these knives are. And I'm just thinking that perhaps you have the skills to make your own knife. You don't have to buy your knife from anybody. You can design it yourself. You can make it yourself. And whether you have that in you, I don't know. But anyway, I'll send you a link. That's what I'll do. So, Chad and Andy, y'all have a good evening. What's the rest of remaining of the evening? And a good early morning if you're going to get a night's rest. And thank you for being here with me. This is why I have a radio. This is KK4JBQ. I'm going to be clear on New Orleans Final. 7-3.
You want it, Andy?
LZI. Go ahead and we'll talk to you later. My dad worked out there out there at that plant from 1974 to 95. He knew about every inch of that plant out there. He did. And from about, I guess, sometime in mid to late 80s on till they closed, that plant was owned by I don't know how many different people. And the last people that owned that plant was called OWT. They moved everything except what Chad's found and others have found out there that they was going to keep out from my plant there and moved it down to the Anderson plant, and then they come back up and cleaned up all those oils that they used on drill bits. Because my mother worked out there a short time, too. All the oils that had to work in and fixing drills, electric drills, they had to clean that stuff up. And after that, they sold it to the guy there that Chad knows that owns the mill out there now. But we'll talk to you later. Go ahead, Chad, KI4LCI.
Enjoyed the conversation, and I'm ready. I'm showing my tired. But one thing I didn't tell both of you before we started all this conversation is before I went to France, I took my VE exam with ARRL and submitted it by snail mail. So when I came back from France, I had this nice fancy envelope on the kitchen table where my dad had been collecting the mail while we were gone. So just want to let both of you know I appreciate all of your help over the past 6 or 8 months with putting up with my crazy questions on Tuesday nights. But I am personally proud to announce that I got my official badge and certificate from the ARRL, and I am going to help contribute to advance the hobby by being a licensed and accredited VE. So I'm really excited about that, and forgot to tell you that when we started this conversation. But just want to, you know, take a minute, show my appreciation, and say, hey, I appreciate both of y'all contributing to that and helping me to understand a fraction of what radio's all about. So just wanted to share that. I'll say 7-3s to the both of y'all. And y'all have a wonderful day tomorrow. And I am on the schedule for Saturday night to be the net controller. So drop by and talk with me for a little bit. This is KO4NUD. Y'all have a wonderful night, and I'll say 7-3. I'm clear.
What hell's the guy? Chad, I don't know if you ever plan on making any more trips like that or not, but of course with Echo Link it goes through the internet and it don't matter. But you remember when you were studying for all your material, reading about the reciprocal license that you can get if you hold an advanced or extra class license? Do you remember that?
I do not. What is a reciprocal license, Andy?
It allows you to operate RF in another country that works with the FCC here. You know, you can use what you've done when you was over there through the echo link, as we all know, is internet. But you can get a reciprocal license, but you have to hold an advanced or extra class license to get it. You get that, but you have to do it, of course, ahead of time before you're going. And you can operate RF in another country.
What you're talking about, and that's called a CERT agreement. Pretty sure that's CERPT, or CEPT, sorry, CEPT. And once you hold that license, you can do that as a general class too. But it's basically just a downloadable form. You go to the FCC website, ARRL, and you print it off in the language of the foreign country that you're going to operate in. And if you're questioned, you can show that agreement or that license. But, yeah, that have this be another topic for another night. Andy, just want to let you know, I visited with Gary today, and he showed me a picture of Ray Allison, and that was kind of neat. So, just going to share that with you guys. Alright, so KO4NUE, I'm clear. Y'all have a wonderful night, and talk at you tomorrow.
Thought about some things. It's been a while, and all my stuff. Last I remember, you had to be advanced or extra, but if they dropped it down as low as general, that's even better. I didn't, that part I wasn't aware of, but I just thought I would mention that, you know, that way if you take an HT with you, or some people have been known to take HF radios with them. I just thought I'd bring that up to you. KI4LZI clear.
Last call in the station, go ahead.
K4RO Doug, if you get a chance. I was flipping through some internet stuff the other night. You talking about K4SUG, and I just happened to find where Ray Allison's novice license was listed in a Radio Amateur Call Book magazine. I think it was 1960.
Amazing. But like I said, Gary showed me a picture of him today, and that was just, I don't know, I don't want to get all weird and stuff, but I mean, that's kind of interesting. I would love to have met the man, let me put it that way. I think we probably think a lot alike, and I'm always interested in pursuing men of knowledge and men of character, because that develops me, and shows me what to be and what not to be as well. Just would like to have met him. Let me leave it at that. But I appreciate the info. Appreciate you letting me know that. And I'd like to see that. But I'll work that out with you later. But appreciate the info. KO4NUE.
I thought you'd like to know it. I wasn't looking for it in particular. Just one of those things I ran across, and it just. Well, how about that, you know? But Ray was—he was something else. As long as I remember his voice, as long as I remember this repeater, and someone else got me interested in ham radio for the second time, and it was through this repeater that they did that. Back in the 70s, I guess. But that's a long story, too. Glad you're back home, okay. K4RO, that's 73.
Have a wonderful night and a wonderful day. See you tomorrow night, sir. Bye-bye.